Tom Weber on NPR News. We're now going to look at a type of visa that lets people work here in the U.S. It's called H-1B. My colleague Reham Fashir had a story last week that suggests the process for renewing these has been slowing in recent months. So we're going to talk more about this now with Sandra Feist, who is an immigration attorney here in the Twin Cities who works with H-1B visa holders. That's a mouthful, Sandra. You don't say that 10 times fast, right?
Yes, that's true.
I appreciate you being here. And if you have a question here for Sandra, maybe you've heard about this topic of these specific visas, the H-1B. Maybe you have one. Maybe you're affected by this issue. We'd love to hear your experience. 1-800-242-2828, 651-227-6000. You can tweet me at WeberTom1, and please don't call or text if you're driving. So take us back and remind us, what is this? Why is it different than all the other kind of visas that happen when you come into the country?
Well, there's a long alphabet soup of different types of visas that are available, and the H-1B is the most versatile of those. It's available for professionals. It requires that the position demand a specific bachelor's degree or higher, but there's no labor market test. And basically, you know, engineers, teachers, you know, every type of professional could be sponsored for the H-1B.
And the word sponsor is important too, right? It's not just a matter of getting what some countries have, like a tourist visa where you come in because I'm going to be going to a resort for 2 weeks. You have to be sponsored by the company you're going to work for. Is that right?
Correct. And there's a very, very long process specifically for H-1Bs because they are so versatile. So, for example, there are very strict requirements about the wages that need to be paid and a notice that needs to be posted at the work site so that, you know, the workforce is aware of the H-1B hire. So there's a very long labor-intensive process for sponsoring an immigrant for an H-1B. And it's also very expensive, both in terms of just the filing fees alone and legal fees on top of that.
In terms of the alphabet soup of visas, in terms of the way we let people into the country, why does this one get a lot of attention? What is it about this one that is of note or why people should care more, maybe a little bit, about this one?
You know, it's gotten a lot of attention by anti-immigrant activists, honestly. It's the most versatile and flexible, as I mentioned. So, you know, if you're going up against the athletes or the culturally unique performers, you know, the other types of visas are for very specific situations. And the H-1Bs are the most, you know, versatile. So they're, you know, affecting the most different occupational categories.
Any sense of how many people in Minnesota hold these visas?
You know, I don't know. I do know that there was a Star Tribune article earlier this year that said that since 2012, we've seen a 75% increase in H-1B filings. So I know that it is significant. You know, the medical technology companies, the universities, you know, big employers in Minnesota do rely on H-1B workers.
So all of our Fortune 500 companies here, especially in the Twin Cities. I mean, that's of note here for this story.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what are we hearing? What did Reham talk about? And what is what you're seeing here in the last few months that is of note that Reham reported about?
Yeah, so we are seeing a deluge of requests for additional evidence. So immigration attorneys will always complain about requests for additional evidence for things that seem like we've already proven that or aren't relevant. But, you know, we've seen a vast, vast increase in these. And Reuters got data from the Immigration Service, which confirmed that there is a 45% increase in requests for additional evidence on H-1Bs, in spite of the fact that the level of filings has remained pretty static.
So the number of people filing largely the same, but I guess what you're saying is the number of pieces of paper is way up.
Yeah. And the request that we're receiving, I've received like 10 pages of templates that say the documentation you provided is not sufficient. Insert here explanation for why the documentation is insufficient.
And it's not
and
clarified?
They didn't fill it in. They didn't bother.
Fill it in?
Yeah, I would say like 75% of the approximately 30 requests for additional evidence that I personally have due by early December don't mention my client's name or the facts of my case or anything at all about the several inches of documentation that I provided.
What's going on?
Well, the ombudsman for the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services is the person who oversees, you know, make sure that the agency is properly managing the processes. Her name is Julie Kirshner, and she is the former executive director for an organization that is a designated hate group by the Southern Poverty Law Center. And she's said things about immigrants having lower IQs. And, you know, she's spent a career being an anti-immigrant activist, and now she's the person within the agency who's looking at these policies and procedures. Also, you know, in April, the administration signed the Buy American, Hire American executive order, and that was based on this idea that H-1B workers were harming American workers' wages, that they were taking jobs, and they wanted the agency to look at the adjudications practices. And what they've done is essentially created new rules, which an agency, you know, they can create regulations mm-hmm. that, you know, help us to understand what the congressional statute wants us to prove, but they're not allowed to create new rules. And the executive order stated that H-1Bs should go to the highest skilled and highest paid workers. And the statute very clearly does not require that. It explicitly says that all levels of professionals are eligible for an H-1B.
So is there a legal challenge to that right now?
There will be. When all of these cases, you know, hopefully they will all get approved. But,
well, I was just wondering that if there were, if that was part of the reason why there would be this delay. I mean, do you get the sense that it's kind of a holding the ball thing? They're just trying to lengthen the time for whatever reason? Or is there a legitimate reason why you would need to provide more information?
I believe it's a war of attrition, that their goal is to just make this process harder and lengthier and less advantageous to the employers who would dare sponsor H-1B workers. I think that's the primary goal. But the types of requests that we've received, for example, prove that a doctor's job requires a bachelor's degree, prove that an engineer...
So you get doctors who are applying for H-1Bs, mm-hmm. and you're saying that you have to prove they had a bachelor's degree?
Well, no, we have to prove that their job requires a bachelor's degree. Because, like, prove to us that an architect, that a dentist, that an engineer's job actually requires a bachelor's degree.
So what do? Do you print out the Minnesota statute that says in order to be licensed as a physician, you have to have an MD? I mean,
yeah.
Is that literally what you do?
Well,
or do you not know?
I don't have one of those cases. I have a bunch of them for engineers, and that's part of it. You know, what they've also tried to argue is, you know, every H-1B has a wage level, generally speaking, between 1 and 4. And so if you say, you know, this is an engineer who just graduated, and this is an entry-level position with this, you know, large manufacturing company, they're coming back with this sort of 1-2 punch, and they're saying, prove to us that it's truly entry-level. And then prove to us that if it is entry level, that it actually requires a specific bachelor's degree.
And to say out loud, that hasn't happened before. Talking about, that prove to us that you need a bachelor's degree, that kind of stuff wasn't happening before.
It's not that we've never received requests for additional evidence that seemed really silly, but it's ubiquitous. It's happening with cases where these are very large, very reputable companies. It's happening across many occupations, and it's happening at a vastly increased scale than we have ever seen.
Go ahead. Finish your thought.
I was just going to say, I've been working in the field of immigration law since 2001, and this is unprecedented.
Sandra Feiss is with us. If this is an experience you have or someone you know has, let us know what you're going through or whatever questions you might have for Sandra. 1-800-242-2828. Let's go to Gary, who's in St. Paul. Hi, Gary. What are your thoughts here today?
Hi. Well, actually, my wife was on a H-1B before February. We actually got married in February, mainly because, well, we were going to be traveling to India. I was going to ask her parents, if it was cool that we could get married, and she was going to be asking my parents and my grandparents. But we bought the tickets, and we found out through travel agents and through, immigration attorneys at the time, that if we were to go, the U.S. consulate there would make her wait 6 months to up to 9 months for an appointment to get a stamp on her passport to come back, and thereby, she would lose her job here. She could potentially lose her H-1B. And I'm a U.S. citizen, so I would have no problem traveling, but there was just so much uncertainty after the election that we decided not to chance it. We actually just got, we asked our parents over Skype. We got married here. Mm-hmm. We filed the paperwork, and it was horrible. I mean, we were checking in every day with the USCIS. We were checking in every day with the U.S. consulate there. You know, what to do, what paperwork to file. Immigration attorneys here were... I mean, they were claiming outrageous prices. Someone quoted me $14,000 for, you know, something that normally should only cost $1,500 to $1,700 for the paperwork to be done. Luckily, we were able to, you know, get a good immigration attorney, Karam Law. They're amazing. Merrick Gurley is amazing. But it was just, yeah, there was so much uncertainty, and even now, you know, every day I kind of live in fear, trying to figure out, did we do the right thing? Did we file all the paperwork? You would not believe the amount of paperwork that they ask you, what all proofs that they ask you. You know, every picture has to have information as to where you were, what you were doing. You have to have hotel stay receipts, making sure that you were in the same room, making sure you have a real relationship, you know, and all of this because people are worried about these people coming over and taking the jobs. My wife has a bachelor's degree. She has an MBA. She is a graduate level, you know, business analyst. She's been in the country for more than 4 years at that point when we first met. It was just surprising as to how much, you know, vitriol and how much horrible, horrible just nonsense we were hearing from some of these people that we thought,
Gary, let me jump in there, Gary. First of all, congratulations. You got married, so congratulations on that. But I'm going to cut in there because we're running short on time. I'm just curious about whether, you know, sometimes you hear, well, maybe if you just get married, you'll be able to stay here. Is that an option here with H-1Bs, or is his just more about the story of the pain of the process?
Well, for sure, if you fall in love with a U.S. citizen and want to get married, you can get married. And for sure, well, I shouldn't say for sure, but, you know, generally, for sure, if you entered legally, and certainly if you're in an H-1B and you fall in love with a U.S. citizen, you can get married and file for the green card. So that's definitely a pretty straightforward legal situation. But it's definitely, you know, I don't know if it would have taken 6 to 9 months to get the H-1B visa, but we definitely have seen more uncertainty at the consulates. And I think that's reflective of just the larger number of procedural hurdles and uncertainty that have been built into the H-1B system and the immigration system in general under the new administration.
Let's go to Matt, who's in Finland, Minnesota. Hi, Matt. We only have a minute, but if you've asked a quick question, we'll be good to go.
Yeah, I just wanted to point out, I live on the North Shore of Lake Superior, and I'm not quite sure how they're doing it, but, you know, a lot of the resorts up here are hiring a lot of H-1B visa folks to do a lot of what seem like fairly entry-level jobs at, you know, being servers and so forth. I'm not quite sure how they're getting away with that paperwork, but you know, I like a lot of the people that are up here are fantastic people, and they really contribute to the community. But it does seem like the program's being abused, and a lot of times it seems like the employers are abusing it because they hold people's visa in their hand. They can kind of work people harder than they would work
Let me jump in there because we only have about a minute left. But what would you say to that, Sandra? Have you heard
people,
about that?
Those people are not on H-1B. They're almost certainly on H-2B, which is seasonal, non-agricultural, unskilled labor. And that's exactly what the H-2B is for. It's for people who come and work on resorts. They have a seasonal temporary need. So those are not H-1B workers.
Isn't the H-1B, though, part of this larger debate of immigration, in immigration, which is very polarized about... Yes, you can talk about people stealing our jobs, but man, these H-1Bs, if they have these degrees and they're doing all these professional jobs, well, that's even worse if they come in and steal our jobs.
You know, that's just statistically not true. So there was a recent report that showed that in computer professions and engineering professions, the unemployment levels were like at 2%, which is lower than the national percent across different occupations. And another report by the Government Accountability Office showed that on average, H-1B computer professionals as of 2015 made on average $7,000 more than average. And so these H-1B workers are not coming in and undercutting cutting wages, and no sane employer would ever sponsor an H-1B worker if they had an option for a U.S. worker who could do that job and who was available. There's just a huge need, in particular in IT, and that need is being filled by H-1Bs, but it's not at the expense of American workers, like if you look at it at the macro level.
Thank you for being here. I know you're busy with all of this, so we will continue to follow this story, and certainly Reham had her story as well, so I'll tweet this out. So thanks so much for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.